Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Independent RX Forum. I'm John Beckner, Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives for NCPA. And with me today is the President and CEO of NCPA, Doug Hoy. Doug, it's great to have you on.
Thanks, John. It's nice to be here and nice to be here with you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Want to talk a little bit about your five trends that are impacting community pharmacy practice. You've spent a lot of time over the past year speaking to different pharmacy groups, amongst them my own Virginia Pharmacist Association. And what I'd like to do today is delve into each of these, talk about what's going on, what's changed over the course of the year, and maybe have you provide some insight into some things that aren't on your list or weren't on your list last year, but may be bubbling to the top of things that are impacting community pharmacy practice.
Yeah, that sounds like fun, John. I tell you, this list of the five trends disrupting healthcare, I'll say up front, this is my list. It's not scientific, but there are things that I see impacting independent community pharmacy for the near future. And I saw on my calendar last year, I had some invitations to a number of whether it be state or national forums to speak. And these are things that I wanted to communicate out to the independent community, pharmacy community. Usually, we're talking about advocacy all the time at NCPA for good reason. These five trends get into advocacy, but they're not solely advocacy based. There are some changes in the marketplace that I'm seeing affecting independent pharmacy. So, those presentations that I've been doing on this topic, they've been fun. We'll see if the listeners agree or if they have their own five trends disrupting independent pharmacy.
That sounds good. And I think the first thing that you talk about is the vertical integration of primary care. And a lot of things going on in this space, certainly, maybe first and foremost is the shortage of primary care that's going on in this country today. And, a lot of mergers and acquisitions, all of these things impacting care. And some of these things provide opportunities for community pharmacy, some provide challenges. So love to have you talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the fancy words, vertical integration of primary care, and what that really boils down to is that big companies want to be able to control where patients go. Because if you control primary care, then you can control where that patient's journey from the from a annual physical to cancer treatment to their outpatient rehabilitation. But that initial primary care, including pharmacy is a big part of that, is a critical choke point to be able to control the patient. And so there's a lot of money being focused on controlling primary care. And a lot of that control of primary care is running through pharmacies. So it really gets into our kitchen, our independent pharmacy's kitchen, when we talk about controlling, the vertical integration of primary care. I made a joke, sort of a joke, to an audience a couple weeks ago that, like with CVS/Caremark/Aetna, I won't be surprised if they're going to try to acquire daycare centers and cemeteries. That way they can truly control every step of the patient from birth to the grave. Shortly after I made that joke, there was some announcement that they were getting into acquiring a company in home health care. So they're certainly one of the players in that area.
Yeah, that gives new meaning to, taking care of folks across the lifespan, certainly.
Yeah, it does. I mean, cradle to grave control. And it's not just CVS that's getting into it. Most people are familiar with the Minute Clinics, and Minute Clinics have been expanded to health hubs. And of course, those have been around for over a decade. And, a lot of listeners might go, it really hadn't affected me that much. But their CVS's acquisition of Aetna changes that game some, because now with an Aetna benefit, it's easier to steer a patient into a MinuteClinic or a health hub. But then CVS is also buying, you know, what would be considered more traditional primary care by buying physician practices and telehealth. But, you know, so people knew that was on CVS's radar. Walgreens, a number of people have heard about Walgreens buying VillageMD, which is another group of primary care physicians that they've been buying and building physical areas near their pharmacies, near the Walgreens pharmacies. So that's one, again, many people are aware of, but that's definitely a big part of their strategy. Maybe newer to some people is Walmart. Walmart has said in their shareholder reports that they want to have 4,000 primary care centers in their super centers. And that primary care would include primary care, like traditional primary care, as well as dentistry, labs, and imaging. And then, of course, we've got Amazon. Amazon's is buying primary care, is buying telehealth. So it's no secret that that's where all of the competitors around us are heading, is controlling primary care and using the pharmacy as a vehicle to do that.
So Doug, what's, you know, given all that's going on in that space, I mean, what's our answer to that? I mean, certainly, you know, our guys, the independent community pharmacists, are certainly, and we've seen it during COVID, you know, trying to satisfy gaps in care with, you know, physicians' offices closing or reducing their hours. How do you see our opportunity with regard to that moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question, John, because, you know, independents provide premium care, the best patient care in the country. I think it's not even close. But if we're fragmented, it's going to be easier for these big entities to, one, hire themselves, but also for others to hire these other networks of primary care providers. So I think the best opportunity for independence is CPESN, Community Pharmacy Enhanced Services Network. CPESN was ahead of its time by 5 or 6 years in putting together networks of independent pharmacists to be able to provide largely primary care services, mostly in support of primary care providers. So the networking, independents have to be networked. We have to be in networks. You know, people looking for primary care are not going to hire John's Pharmacy by itself, no matter how good you are. They need a network of pharmacies that can cover a geographic territory, take care of patients, provide data back to them, and they need to get paid for those services. So CPSN is the best bet that independents have. Again, it's got to be a network. We've got to be in a network providing these services in order to be a player in this new world where primary care is the trump card.
You know, now's probably a good time to talk about one of your other trends, and that's, you know, changing customer expectations. I think, you know, what we've seen during COVID is pharmacists really stepping up to the plate, you know, providing immunizations, providing testing, you know, providing a clinical experience that's, you know, just as good as, you know, your traditional provider, but really being more convenient. So how can we capitalize on, you mentioned CPSN, but how can we capitalize on the changing and increased customer expectations about what pharmacists are able to do?
Yeah, you know, the pandemic really solidified even more how much the role of pharmacy in the minds of consumers. And that's some real estate, the consumer's mind real estate what pharmacies were able to do, pharmacists were able to do during the pandemic, that may be the greatest positive outcome that comes out of the pandemic. That consumers now, it's not unusual for them to go to a pharmacy, not only for their flu shot, but for other immunizations, to go to the pharmacy for point of care test. They've come to expect the convenience and the accessibility of pharmacists and pharmacies. That's huge. I mean, that's the way things were going, but COVID accelerated that trend by, I don't know, probably 5 or 10 years. So from an independent standpoint, I think that's one of our best assets, is the relationship that we have with consumers. We, to the extent we can arm consumers with information, arm consumers to go back to their employers, arm consumers, you know, when they are interviewed by media to talk about the importance of independent pharmacy owners, to object, you know, when that restricted network comes out and the independent's been is not included, or the, you know, a TRICARE contract comes out and it's so horrible that pharmacies can't sign it. We need to kind of empower and marshal up consumers to help us help them to speak up on our behalf. But that new real estate that pharmacists have, that's something that's not going to go away anytime soon. It's good. It's really a positive.
Yeah, I think not only have, you know, consumer expectations changed and consumers' attitudes toward pharmacists, but, you know, what's happened is, you know, we've gotten the attention of legislators. We've gotten the attention of other providers. You know, just case in point, there was a test and treat bill in Virginia that recently passed, and one of the big proponents of it is a physician. So, you know, I think more and more people are understanding the value that that pharmacists bring to the table. And like you say, that's a really good thing.
You know, John, you're exactly right. And that actually is a pretty nice segue into one of the other trends that I've been talking about. And that's the impact of the Supreme Court case on pharmacy and consumers. And so the Supreme Court case, again, most listeners, I'm sure, know about Rutledge versus PCMA, the Arkansas Attorney General, you know, thankfully, the Leslie Rutledge had the courage to say, you know, the lower courts ruled against Arkansas and unfortunately ruled in favor of PCMA. Not all the lower courts, but the last lower court before appealing to the Supreme Court. And she appealed and was one of the very few cases that the Supreme Court took up. And NCPA was with the Arkansas Pharmacists Association co-piloting. They were the pilot and we were co-piloting with them in support from the early days. And I think everyone knows the outcome. Unanimous, supposedly a fractured Supreme Court justices, liberal, conservative, whatever. They weren't fractured on this one. It was 8-0. Everyone agreed that Arkansas was right, PCMA was wrong, and that states have authority, more authority than what had been interpreted before, to regulate PBMs. And so to your example about the bill in Virginia, states have now been empowered, and legislation has been introduced. Over several hundred pieces of legislation have been introduced in states that are pro-pharmacy, pro-consumer, and allow states to further regulate PBMs. That's one of the landmark things that, you know, when people look back at the history of pharmacy, they're going to look at that Rutledge case as when at least there was some movement in changing the pharmacy payment model, which is NCPA's primary objective. It's yeah. Not the panacea. I don't want to, you know, anyone to say, well, hey, it passed 2.5 years ago and nothing's changed. It's not the panacea, but it is a big positive step for pharmacies and for consumers and for states to be able to finally regulate these PBMs. which previously had just said, hey, it's ERISA, you can't touch me. And the Supreme Court said, no. That is not the case. So I think continuing to grow that, continuing to work through states to regulate PBMs is important, and including getting those states to actually take enforcement action.
Yeah, I mean, as earth-shaking as that decision was, and you know, the fact that they came to that decision and came to it unanimously is really incredible. But really, the downstream effects, the domino effects of, you know, what can the states do at this point, that's even more important. And you mentioned enforcement, and, you know, that's the other side of the coin here, because, you know, the challenge with a lot of these states is, okay, who's going to enforce it? You know, who is it, the Bureau of Insurance? Enforcement of these PBM regulations and laws has always been the challenge.
Yeah, and I think that is something, and we hear that all the time from our members. We see it where, hey, we passed these laws, everyone was high-fiving each other and celebrating, but then the insurance commissioner or whomever was in charge of enforcement isn't taking any action. And I know, as we've talked to states, as we've talked to insurance commissioners, one of the things that NCPA does is there's actually an association of insurance commissioners, and we work closely with that group on PBM regulation issues. We have been for many, many years. One of the things I was in Tennessee earlier this month, and they were talking about submitting complaints to the insurance commissioner and the importance of that. And I think it was Alabama that I've heard has a program where they're encouraging consumers to submit complaints to their insurance commissioner. No matter what state you're in, having some regular cadence of submitting complaints to the insurance commissioner, because, like I said, we've heard some state insurance commissioners say, well, yeah, the law's on the books, but there's so many laws on the books. We have to prioritize where we're hearing the most complaints, and we're not hearing any complaints.
Right.
Whether that's true or an excuse, I don't know, but let's take that, you know, I think we as independents need to take that excuse away and see if the squeaky wheel does get the grease, and just make sure that insurance commissioner is hearing loud and clear from pharmacies and consumers of pharmacies.
Yeah, Doug, I couldn't agree with you more. And you said something the other day in one of our conversations, is that, you know, this, you know, reporting these abuses to the appropriate body should be part of a regular pharmacy workflow. You know, have someone that's in charge of making sure that you know, these abuses get identified and reported, and you know, if that's the case, well, then the enforcement hopefully will be there.
You know, that's an interesting idea, John, is to identify someone at the pharmacy. You know, maybe it's your lead technician, maybe mm-hmm. it's a support staff member, but, and, you know, maybe that's a something that's measured every week or every month. How many complaints did we send to the insurance commissioner? Because I'm guessing there's probably at least several times a day that pharmacies are seeing situations come up that could warrant a complaint to the insurance commissioner. Now, we need to be careful. We don't want to be the boy who cried wolf and have stuff that, that the insurance commissioner has no authority over. It needs to be consistent with the law. So we don't want to, you know, overdo it just to have quantity. But maybe there's someone at the pharmacy, again, maybe a technician, support staff, someone, if there's a back office, if you have someone there, who, you know, looks at the end of the month, and maybe it's 3 a month, maybe it's 5 a month, whatever that metric is, and you measure that, and you have accountability there, so it doesn't, you know, slide off for other things. But that may be something that, as a group of pharmacies, we need to do to make sure that state insurance commissioners are hearing loud and clear there's problems, there's laws on the books, and we need them to enforce those laws.
Absolutely. So, Doug, one of your other trends is workforce needs pressure pharmacy practice acts. Can you elaborate on what exactly you mean by that? Because when I first read that, I said, you know, what does he mean by that? So maybe you could go into a little bit more detail and tell us exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I think even these slides were circulating and someone, I think I saw some chatter where someone decided to misinterpret these to the negative. What I'm talking about here was technicians. Less so now of the chaos and pandemonium in pharmacies with the COVID vaccinations having largely, definitely cooled down from where they were a year ago. But with the chains, it was just, total pandemonium, total chaos. Walgreens in particular are closing their stores. Not all of them, of course, but some of them seemingly randomly, and just really disrupting some of their patients. The reason I included this was both as an opportunity and a warning. So my suspicion is that chains would use this chaos, this meltdown, as an opportunity to try to expand pharmacy practice acts for support staff, for technicians, as well as for technology. And that is not, those two things, expanding pharmacy practice acts, changing pharmacy practice acts to update them for better use of technology and technicians, that by itself may not be a bad thing. In fact, it could be a good thing. But, and this way I presented this when I, to the audiences was, but be careful, because it also could be used as an opportunity to expand authority in both categories well beyond what's best for patients and the profession, and instead what's best for Wall Street. So I included this one because, again, I think it's an opportunity, but it's also a cautionary note for listeners to be aware when these pharmacy practice acts, changes come up, that it's not some Trojan horse. Right. That sounds good, but it's actually not in the best interest, again, of consumer and profession, and the profession in the long run.
So I want to talk a little bit more about technicians. Obviously, technicians and technology are important here. But, with regard to technicians, NCPA recently made an investment in PTCB. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're happy to now be one of the partners in PTCB. It brings together most of organized pharmacy that uses technicians together in one place. And one of the reasons that NCPA decided to move forward to work with PTCB is that we see we've understood for a long time, but the importance of a support team to empower the pharmacists to practice at the top of their license. But that's more important now than ever. And if credentialing and certifying technicians can further help empower pharmacists to do even more, then that's something that we want to formally, we are now formally a part of. So we encourage technicians to get certified. We encourage pharmacy owners to use those technicians to free them up, free the pharmacist up to do even more services, more billable services, more services that allow them to get out from behind the counter, and provide more of these primary care gaps that result in them getting paid for those services and also improving their communities.
Yeah, I think you've used the terminology careful expansion of authority, and certainly, technicians being allowed to immunize has really paved the way for, I guess, roughly 300 million COVID vaccines being administered, during the pandemic. So that certainly is a good thing. I found the last trend that you that you mentioned to be really, really interesting. You talk about winners and losers based upon location. I know some of the states have been more active than others with regard to, working with Medicaid and things like that. Let's talk a little bit about your winners and losers and how that's affecting, whether pharmacy in the state's going to be successful or not.
Yeah, this one, when I wrote this one, I was this is probably the most controversial of the five, because depending on, what your address is, what state you're in, helps to determine not all, but some of your success. Which means that some states are you're going to be positioned better than in other states. So for example, where your Medicaid rate is, independent pharmacies have a higher percentage of their business Medicaid than chains do. Therefore, when the Medicaid payment in that state has a lot to do with the success of independent pharmacies. So if you're in a state that has a, a fair Medicaid payment rate, your it doesn't mean it's automatic success, but you've got a leg up on a state that where the Medicaid payment is poor. One of the things I've seen over the years traveling to almost all 50 states, working with pharmacy organizations for many years, those states that have alignment between their state board, their state association, and their schools of pharmacy, those are the states that I see the most success. And if you have pharmacist legislators in those states who can explain and interpret and translate our mixed up, messed up pharmacy payment model, that goes a long way towards having, towards the pharmacists in that state being successful and being able to take care of patients throughout the state.
I mean, that last point you made is probably worth its weight in gold, because a lot of these pharmacy issues are complex. They're difficult to explain to the layperson, and what better individual to try to do that than a than another pharmacist?
You need those pharmacist whisperers in legislative bodies.
Yeah,
We
for
and we're
sure.
lucky up here in DC, we've got two now. We've got Buddy Carter from Georgia and Diana Harshbarger from Tennessee, and could always use more, but Buddy's only been up here for 8 years, and he's helped. He's made a difference. Diana's I think in her third or fourth year, and she's making a difference too.
Yeah. So, Doug, we've covered a lot of ground with your five trends. Are there other things that we haven't talked about? I know initially you mentioned Amazon, but are there other things that we want to bring into the mix of things that are impacting community pharmacy practice?
Well, yeah, John, there's a lot of other things.
Yeah.
I
For
tried to
sure.
limit it to five. I think in most of the presentations I did, I had about 45 minutes to an hour. And, remember, this is my list that I put together, and it's kind of like, it's a little bit like, who are the five greatest quarterbacks of all time? Well, I've got my list, and you have yours, and the listeners have theirs, and there's probably some overlap between them, but everyone's going to have a little bit different opinion. I do think there's a number of other things that could be on this list. Amazon, like we talked about, especially as they try again to get into primary care and with their customer acquisition program, with their $5 program, which I call their customer acquisition program. I don't think they called it that. We didn't talk about specialty and biosimilar pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
That's 54% of all the dollars spent on pharmacy products in the country are on specialty and biosimilar. And we know that the three largest PBMs have 70% of that market and are consciously steering patients into their mail order pharmacies, which means that this huge revenue stream independents are being, and even chains, a lot of chains are being left out of. Consumer cash cards, with between Cuban and GoodRx and all the others out there. That's certainly something that could have come up. I even throw in drones every now and then, because I can easily see drones being a part of pharmacy delivery, not tomorrow, but in the not too distant future. It'll certainly open up, you know, well, I make a joke about target practice where I'm from, but that the drones would be target practice. But I do think that things like that are things that we need to be thinking about as independent pharmacists.
Yeah, you scared me for a minute when you said target practice. I thought you were going to propose having drones giving immunization, but, you know, hopefully that's not going to be the case.
Well, watch out down below. Here comes the syringe, you know. Make sure your shoulder's in the right landing pad, I guess. But
yeah,
I mean, so these five trends, I sincerely believe there are things that we need, that independence, we have to keep our eye on the ball as far as macro trends affecting the profession. There's no shortage of trends disrupting healthcare, and these are just a few.
So, you know, one thing I think we're just about out of time, but I did want to mention a couple of things, one of which is, you know, we've got our annual fly-in coming up on April 26th and 27th here in Washington. And I think more information on that, I think, on ncpa.org. Anything you want to say about that event, which we're thrilled that it's live this year and really excited about folks coming to DC to talk to their congressman.
Well, I mentioned at the start that I intentionally tried to do the five trends presentation without talking about all the advocacy issues, and less so during our podcast, but more so certainly when I did this program at Pioneer and at Cardinal and some of the other places where I gave this presentation, I wound up talking about politics all the time, because 60% of our payments, you know, pharmacies' payments come from Medicare, Medicaid, government programs. And so we, even though these are trends in the marketplace, the political realm is going to have a huge impact on how these trends affect independent pharmacies. So the old adage, there's two old adages. One is if you're not on the menu, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. That's right. One. So if we're not at the table, if you're not in DC for the fly-in, then you're on the menu. And the other is NCPA's get into politics or get out of pharmacy. And some people don't really like the political aspect of it. It's messy. It's sometimes a little slimy. Politics can be a bit slimy. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your perspective, it's necessary to be part of it, because if you're not part of it, you're going to be part of it in a way you don't want to. So there's a lot of momentum to reform PBMs between the FTC investigation, the House Government Oversight Committee just announced an investigation into PBMs. Senate has a bill called the PBM Transparency Act. So we've got them on the run, but we can't let our foot up off the gas. In fact, we have to press the gas down harder. And I think one of the things we ultimately have to, you know, demand is, hey, government, you're seeing the problems with PBMs. The investigations are good. Even better, stop hiring them. Fire the PBM. Fire the PBM and replace them with someone to administer claims, but it's not going to play the tricks that PBMs have paid on taxpayers and consumers over the last 20 years. But we need to have the voice in person to demand that.
Yeah, like you say, you know, we've made some significant inroads, but, you know, the battle's not, the war's not won. You know, we've won some battles, but we've got to keep the pressure on to make sure we achieve the outcomes that we're looking for. But, hey, listen, I really have enjoyed talking with you today. This has been fun. Hope we can do it again.
It's been great, John. Anytime.